Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
This is a podcast from the Smart Material Collective, made by nerds, funded by the listeners. I love your podcast.
Nice. That's actually happened to me at a party. Someone's come up to me. He's like, I recognize your voice. And I was like, what the fuck?
Is it? Oh my God. Listen, get yourself a deal, like one of those like voiceover deals, man.
You need that. Bro, and the guy was like, yo, I've listened to your podcast. I've told you about this, Alex. Remember?
Vaguely.
Yeah, I was at a party in East London and some guy came up to me. He was like, I've been to your live show. I was like, what the fuck? It's like, not only you listen to podcasts, you've been to our show. We're in the middle of fucking East London, like randomly.
I had a girl come up on the street to me and was like, oh, I really like your podcast. So someone that I actually interacted with Twitter before, but I didn't know her. I didn't actually know her face in that. I'd liked a couple of tweets and probably retweeted that, but you know, she's cool online and shit. And oh, I love your podcast. And I'm there like, the fuck? Because I had my headphones on. And so the way she came up to me, I assumed I owed her money.
You're like, shit, I'm sorry.
Hello and welcome to Why Aren't You a Doctor Yet, the podcast where we claim to answer questions like what's up with trees and why is the sky blue, and then we never do. Why is that, Alex?
Look, yeah, from the first episode we had a dream, we had an idea, but then the podcast got too good at sort of being different and I actually never came up with an alternate introduction, so people listen to it and they're like, oh, is this like, you know, where you answer questions and stuff? And like Hannah has, you know, actually shown, no.
We don't do that.
We don't.
We don't.
We raise more questions for the world.
That is sort of our brand. Yeah.
That's the journey to knowledge. Asking the right questions.
In the studio with me today, I have Sahail Patel, journalist and video content creator and professional dinosaur, we found out today.
It's true. I have a lot of experience. Explain. I have a lot of experience, credentials.
Were you in Jurassic Park?
I didn't get the role that time, but
that doesn't sound like you're very professional.
Which dinosaur were you?
I was the one with the claws and the hands.
The one that eats Yoshi. The hand in the toilet.
Yoshi, that's it. Yoshi, that's the dinosaur.
What he's really saying is that if we take him right now, ground him up, we can use it to power a lot of cars and a lot of homes.
Is this a nerd reference that I'm not getting?
Rob, it's how petrol is made.
It's petrol. It's a proper science joke. That's something I wouldn't normally get.
This because I'm
fossil fuels?
Not really a nerd. I'm just an imposter nerd.
It's true. Aren't we all?
We also have Oz Ismail, who's a comedy genius and awesome best friend, and who's just got back from New York.
I have. I've been promoting us in the States. I haven't. I've just been chilling.
What were you doing?
Did you sing that song? New York, New York.
No, last time I did.
Oh, nice.
You are a nerd, just off a musical variety.
Yeah, I'm just like a gay nerd. Like, gay nerd is my brand, so, you know. So what did I do? I did go and see a musical, actually.
That's nice.
I saw some amazing friends, and I promoted the podcast. I did some Instagram stories because Alex let me onto the account.
Oh, nice.
You did four.
Hey, listen, okay. The last time I was in America, as much as I hate the dating apps, I used it to promote the podcast. Why do you think the listens in America went up when I was in Portland?
It's true. They went up by about 8,000.
Actually,
you were busy. Fucking hell, son.
Actually.
Man's on lock, lad.
Actually, if I take a look at the stats in and around Portland, you'll see they went up by exactly 7.
Oh.
So what does that say?
Hey, don't slut shame me, okay?
That's good, man.
I'm not entirely sure whether Alex numbers. Is slut-shaming you or saying that, like, that number should be higher.
Oh, this is like your James Franco comment, but never mind. Number.
Just saying, zero techers.
Hey. And finally, we have Alex Lathbridge, the amazing producer of this podcast. Alex and Oz just also happen to be doing PhDs, apparently. You know, we're not going to talk
about
that.
We don't talk about that because he's in the worst stage right now, writing.
What? We don't talk about that shit.
So, what have we all been doing this week?
Sleeping.
Good.
That was fun. I enjoyed the sleeping stuff.
Sleeping is good. I've been trying to sleep. I've spent like the last 3 days dismantling furniture, reassembling furniture, packing, moving boxes and unpacking, and everything hurts.
Wait, didn't you move like
I've been moving for 3 weeks, but this weekend was like the move. Like as in I started sleeping in the new house.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
Wow. How's that?
My new room has like a blind that isn't particularly opaque and the sun wakes me up.
So I heard this one fact basically. When you sleep in a new place for the first time, that half your brain stays awake. Is that true?
I think that's dolphins.
No, Jenny, I read this. That half your brain stays awake because it's like a safety thing, isn't it?
Wait, like fight or flight?
Yeah, it's like when you sleep in a new place, you won't get a fully restful
sleep. Oh, because
predators
are going to come and get you.
All right.
Yeah, predators, like child predators and stuff.
No! Fuck! Oh my god!
Hey, listen, the best comedy is controversial.
Oh my god!
Are you awake now?
Are you awake? Wake up, motherfucker! I watched this fucked up documentary.
No. So on
BBC Four.
What I was gonna say is if that fact is correct, I will keep it in. If it isn't, I will not.
So, I can imagine you not getting as restful a night's sleep in a new place. I'm not so sure about half your brain staying awake.
It's science.
I'm looking at the neuroscience person here.
I mean,
and
I don't...
also if you travel to a place the first time, then that journey seems a lot longer in your mind. But when you do the journey over a period of time, your brain adjusts and your perception of time is adjusted.
If this fact is in fact correct, you will hear it. If it wasn't correct, you will have not heard this section. So me saying it is actually kind of moot, but I just want you to know you hearing it right now means it has gone through like a layer of quality check.
Memory. Anyway, I forgot we did that
swiftly on. Oz, what have you been up to this week?
I have been away. I've been in America. I just popped over to New York for the weekend.
As you do.
That's the life I live now.
Really?
You're so bougie.
How many days were you there for?
I went there on Friday and I came back this morning and so came straight here.
Tuesday. Wow. Friday.
It's just like, you know, it's just the thing.
Yes, it is Tuesday.
Oh,
Alex.
Thank God.
It's a thing that I do now. I just pop over casually.
Darling, just we're going to New York.
Right, you know.
Going to get
staying
some pastrami.
Staying in Brooklyn because that's, well, no, it was nice. I went to see, like, I have a lot of friends there and I went to see them and hung out with them and it was really great.
Oh, that's nice.
We're your friends.
I mean, that's why I'm like transatlantic now. I just fly back and forth to see my friends. This is the life I lead. I hope my friends are grateful for this.
We are very grateful for your presence.
Oh, thanks.
And Alex, what have you been up to this week?
What have I been doing? Me and Sahel, we're on radio.
Oh, yeah, shit.
Wow. Yeah. You said I'm bougie. Tell us about this.
Basically, we were on the radio.
Yeah, we're on BBC London.
BBC London, isn't it?
Yeah,
we're Sunny and Sashay show.
Yeah. Wait,
show.
You're not like on the news or something for doing something terrible.
No, it's fine. No, it wasn't like crime watch any shit.
This is what happens when you leave the country.
And it wasn't exactly our target audience. It was like a target audience, but we will get there.
No, it was jokes. We had good fun. Anyway, no, it was good. We had a good time and it was enjoyable.
They invited us back on, so.
Yeah, they invited. Oh, yeah.
We're going to do the whole.
You're going to have your own show.
Listen up for us on the radio.
Oh, yeah. We're going to drop out Sahel and bring you two in.
Yeah, it's true. We are going to do that.
Yeah, we are actually doing that.
Our liability.
So there's been quite a lot of news in the last few months. Of I think it's now 2/3 of single Brits in their 20s live with their parents, half of 20 to 25-year-olds. Okay, so there's one side of it that's like, you know, yes, the housing situation is iffy. Housing isn't affordable. Housing in certain locations like London is really unaffordable. Other areas of the country are almost as bad as London and people don't get any of the subsidies they get in London. And there's all that. That's problematic. But equally, I find like the discourse that like living at home is in like with your parents is inherently bad, is, you know, inherently holding people back, culturally quite problematic.
I feel like, do you know, when you take me out, right? Do you know the show Take Me Out? I'm reticent to say I live with my parents because it's like, if you go and take me out and you say, oh, I live with my parents, every motherfucking light is telling off you.
That is the question that crops up under disagree on OKCupid the most of any question.
The thing is, I've lived out for a long time and I found myself living back at home 2 years ago, similar to like Alex finishing your PhD, moving back, finished my training scheme, moved back. And I've been back at home since. It's not our choice at first, but I feel it's really difficult to get your own place in the current economic climate, the industry that we're in, freelancing. There's a lot of different variables. So I think what I'm trying to say, there's a lot of judgment around that, I feel. Yeah, you know,
but
like you said.
Do you see it as a negative?
I see it as, personally, because obviously I'm living at home, I don't see it as a negative. I can understand the circumstances in which someone might want to live at home or might not have another choice but to live at home. But I can understand that there is... A certain, especially again, it's a cultural thing where living at home is kind of frowned upon, or people look down at you. People might look down on you if you do live at home. But personally, I don't have that sentiment. If anything, while I was at first reticent to move home, but the more I've lived at home, the more I've actually seen the benefit of this extra prolonged period with my family. Who, you know, when I do eventually leave, which will be for good. I'm glad I had this extra time. Mm-hmm. So fuck, you know, I know people judge me, but it's up to them, isn't it, to do that if they want.
So I live with my sister and my brother-in-law, and I guess it's like home. It's kind of like living at home, but also like having housemates who like you actually want to live with.
Okay, so I'd like to jump in on that because when we came back from Portland, went back to your home, right? Walked in, your sister had put bunting up.
Oh.
All right. Saw all of your shelves with post-it notes on saying, oh, there's food in here, there's this in
all
here.
My favorite foods.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
She's your mother.
She's basically, I'm her practice child. But then I feel like we're each other's parent because like we moved out of home when we were teenagers and my sister and I lived together in the city for a while, and then she went to university and I came here for university. So like now we've always had this like we look out for each other type thing.
Yeah,
you know, so for me it's like it is like living at home, and it helps me because so I live, it's her house, and like I rent off my sister.
Yeah,
and it helps me out while I'm a student to save some money so that eventually I can actually go and find my own place.
How much are you paying in rent, can you say?
I pay £500 a month.
Fucking hell.
I mean, I'm paying less than you.
There's some interesting sort of opinion pieces from, I think, economists or anthropologists that say that sort of living with your family as an adult helps you have an adult relationship with them going forward as well, which is definitely something I found. So I moved back in with my parents a year ago when I went freelance, having lived on my own in a gorgeous studio flat in Cheltenham for 2.5 years.
What I like about this is all of us are like, yeah, we live with our parents, but we can fucking do it alone.
Yes.
Just to confirm.
Like, I did it for 6 months. I did it in America, you guys, just saying if you didn't realize.
But like, I sort of feel similar to what Oz is saying. Like, I'm probably going to lose some friends over this, but like, my parents are genuinely the least annoying housemates I've ever lived with.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like living with other people is hard, and actually living with them, like, I just don't see it as like something that should have stigma like attached to it. I pay rent, I cook for them. Mm. Yeah, I'm also thoroughly spoilt. But
do you also think like there's one thing like living with other people, but also some people do it because some people genuinely don't want to live by themselves. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
People want that company. They want to go home and like be around other people.
I found as much as I loved having my own space, yeah. I really struggled with the loneliness.
Oh, really? I loved living by myself.
I got nobody.
That's hit track from Walnut.
Hit track from Mr. Cashew himself.
I will have no Akon slander.
Anyway, but I used to suffer from loneliness actually living in Manchester. It's very difficult.
You guys need to just be learn to be with yourselves.
Listen, I started playing World of Warcraft. That's how deep shit got.
No, lonely. But no, I feel as though there's something there because all three of us were living alone in England. Loneliness, especially in the UK, where it's the weather, you know, in the US, like Portland.
I mean, the weather in Portland was the same. I don't know what it is about. I think it's more when you do then engage with people outside of your house, people, because it's a smaller place, people have time for you. Whereas you step out in London, people will just like, you know, step over your body. Yeah, I feel.
I would step over your body. And so the latest stats on this are from 2017. And you can see there's sort of like a massive shift and a massive difference between men and women. You know, at the age of 15, you know, almost 100% of... you know, both men and women still live at home, right? But as the age increases, you can see there's like a shift. So by the time people are 20, 60% of men still live at home, whereas only 49% of women. And so you see that seems quite close, but it really gets interesting because by the time you hit 29, 21% of men still live with their parents. Only 7% of women do.
That's really interesting because I feel like there's more stigma attached to men living at home.
Really?
Yeah. I've been having lots of chats about this because of the fact that it seems to crop up on dating sites a lot, that like living at home is problematic. And people have been like, oh, well, it's not an issue if it's a woman. And it's like almost it's not seen as a reflection on your character.
Being on a gender stereotype, but men are meant to be seen as like self-sufficient providers, aren't they?
Mm.
It's like a sign of masculinity. It's like, you know, you put falafel on the table, right? Like that's 21st century, right? but you know what I mean? So I do understand.
Falafel on the table.
Falafel on the table is vegan, motherfuckers. but I can see where you're coming from. But it surprises me that stat actually that 7% women tend to move out. Maybe is this something to do with women to get married earlier or something, or I mean, getting serious relationships earlier? Or
yeah, I mean, these stats don't really help here. So I mean, look, 21% of men still living at home compared to 7% of women by the time you're 29. So that's what, 1 in 5 versus like 1 in 14, 1 in 15. Yeah. And so you can see how it's a lot more normalized, like you were saying.
Anecdotally, I think there is a cultural, like there are cultural differences in how much stigma is attached to living with family. So I found when I first moved back home that generally, you know, my friends who are from, you know, Black or Asian cultural backgrounds were just sort of like, oh, cool. Yeah, you know, you must be enjoying, you know, and it would be like, if they did make a comment, it would be something like, oh, you must be enjoying your mum's cooking again. Or, you know, oh, you must be really enjoying being back with your parents. Whereas a lot of my friends who are sort of white English were like, oh, so when do you think you'll be able to move out? And similarly, that sort of happened again now that I've moved with my parents. You know, a lot of people have been like, oh, are you finally moving out? And it's like, no, I'm moving with them. And for less than the rent that I probably pay for a box room somewhere in London, I've got a really nice room and an office. Yeah, and I just don't see... I don't see a downside to it in the way that a lot of people sort of automatically do.
Yeah, it's a taboo thing, isn't it? Pragmatically, it makes sense. You're right, because I'm in a similar situation. It's like, why am I paying £700 to just about live somewhere with the stress that brings when I could live at home, and that gives me flexibility in my career and what I'm doing? And you know, I see it as a short-term trade-off. Yeah, there is that stigma, and you know, I have to live with that. But in the end, you know, I have faith in the vision, but you know, it is difficult to explain that to people. When I had friends are like, oh, you should move out, you know, I think you should move out and this, that and the other, and I'm like, but you don't know what my plan is. So it is difficult, but I think just having that conversation with people is a good way of getting over that, isn't it?
I feel like also maybe the like age plays into it, like the older you are, people like expect you to just have, like, have moved out and like have your, because I certainly as the oldest person here feel that's like that pressure.
He's like 26.
Wise old sage.
26 with the skin of an 18 year old. I'm kidding.
My god,
I'm moisturized.
We're not going to talk about lampshades.
Oh no.
Anyway.
You know, so like, I feel like that plays into massively, and it plays into my, maybe part of it's like, I put pressure on myself because I'm like, you know, I feel like I need to get.
Yeah,
my place,
I think,
you know?
There are benefits of having your own place in the sense, especially if you're adult, because you have great autonomy over yourself and your life. You know, if living at home, you still got to be respectful that it's your parents' house, isn't it? And I think
that's
element.
It. It's yeah. like, it's not just your space. You have to be respectful of who owns the space and like what, how they want to live. Yeah. And it's different. It's not difficult. It's just different, you know?
Mm-hmm. Look, let's say we're all trying to say it's very difficult to fuck in your parents' house.
I mean, as a single
Hey, listen. Yeah. That's not a fun thing to have to worry about in my situation, right?
As in,
I ain't getting any to begin with, man.
Oh, yeah.
So we ain't gonna worry about that. That's your situation, bro.
Yeah.
That's your situation.
Yeah, okay.
Well, we all find ways.
Yeah. But no, like, it's only having grown up and seeing, like, a lot of my friends, you know, who are perhaps students in London or now live in London and have come from somewhere else, and, you know, it being very normalized for them, that I have now become to question it. Because growing up, I, you know, family both here and in like Ghana and stuff, you know, like you could live at home for as long as you require, because it makes sense to like, if you are, why would you put money into someone else's pocket when if you have the resources to live at home and they have, you know, to contribute, you can do that rather than take money, give it to someone else and not save up to get a place of your own. Like, it's sort of like keeping the wealth within the family.
It's,
I guess,
pragmatic, isn't it? It makes more sense from an economic point of view. Yeah. But it's, again, it's a cultural thing, isn't it? In Western culture, you leave the house and you buy your own place and you start your own family. Whereas in Asian culture, specifically, I'm talking from experience here, it's like the family unit, it stays together. People live near each other. Mm. The house next door comes up, you buy the house next door, you make it, you know what I mean? It's like, legitly, that's what we do.
My mother decided one day, so like we were chatting and she was like, oh, you know what's really, really good? You know, the Asians. And I was like, okay, please elaborate.
This is how every racist conversation
is. This going on the podcast?
This is definitely going on there. No, she's like, oh, you know, it's really good because very, very clever. I'm not going to do an accent because my parents didn't survive, you know, two military coups and a famine for me to come here and mock how they sound some of the time. But, you know, it's really clever how in Tooting specifically, she's talking about all the Asians people, you know, all the people there, all the Asian people there tend to buy up like streets.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, then you've got real community living because you have people that you know and you can rely on for childcare, for food, to take care of one another. And, you know, to me, while it looks weird, like, to me, that makes sense because, like, I'm thinking back to, like, to family in Ghana and stuff, and you have, like, a compound. You know, you have a large house. You have an area where lots of people live. You know, it might be gated off. It might not be, you know. But having that compound where you have lots of different people living there, it makes sense. So there is that small community, like, you know.
Yeah,
you're saying.
It also makes for good dramas as well, family dramas.
I was going to say it's good for like sharing the biryani.
It's like, did you hear what Auntie did? It's like, shh, nobody cares.
No, but it's
saying,
it's back in Sri Lanka where my parents live. They like. Their siblings live quite close to each other, and you know, it's very much the case. Mm. Okay, it's helpful for like childcare and stuff, but you're right, it's high
people
drama.
Your shit, man.
Yeah, yeah.
People, shit's going down.
Yeah, you know, everyone's shit, and they know you're. It's yeah, not optimal.
So one of the things I was going to say is when I was living like either with housemates or on my own, like my family in Singapore found this really strange because pretty much all my cousins have gone like from parental home to marital home. And even though Singapore is, you know, generally quite like westernized in terms of how people live, because it's so small, like, you know, it doesn't matter where you're working or studying in the country, you can live at home. And it was really interesting actually having to like explain to people that no, I had to live alone and couldn't live at home because my work was 4 hours away from my parents' house. But I think there are practical benefits apart from money as well. So with my health problems, like, there is a big difference between, like, your parents or other family members looking after you and, like, housemates looking after you when you're sick, for example. Like, I always found, like, every time I'd have to ask a housemate to, like, get me food or whatever, like, it felt like a massive favour. Whereas, like, I find I get better a lot quicker now I'm living with my parents because I have food. I'm not having to subsist on cereal because I don't have the energy to cook. And so I think there's so many benefits to communal living.
Funny you say that, because I remember when I was living in Manchester alone, I got really ill sometimes, and, like, to the point where I was, like, literally shaking and stuff. Mm. I was, like, on my own. I was like, fuck, I'm going to die. You know, it's like, this is how I die. Tell my mom. You know what I mean? It's like,
one's there to tell.
And then it was like three, you know, it's like 3 a.m. You're like, shit, there's no one here. What the fuck? Like, so there's a time where I was going through really bad back problems. I couldn't walk properly. So I had to go get food. Mm. And it was like a 10-minute walk to the shop. It took me half an hour. I was like holding onto the lamppost, like, oh my God, this is life. Like, you know.
Sorry, I shouldn't laugh at
you. No,
it's genuine. Laugh at your downfall, but no, it's a hilarious mental picture.
It's pretty funny, but, you know.
So I never knew this. And so I feel really bad, because when you told me that you got robbed, I was there like, oh man, you know, these things happen. But now you tell me that you were also going through horrendous back pain. I feel really bad.
That was a shitty time, man. I'm not going to lie. Yeah. It's like, the people broke into my house, nicked everything except for my guitar. So I just sat there and sat so they robbed my house. Dude, it's like blues and shit. While I wait for the police, that's sad times.
Yeah. Old Town Road.
Like, the police took like 9 hours. It's crazy.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than 1 billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
So, Alex, you've done some research into why living at home has become demonised.
Yeah, and it's actually really interesting because I think we've sort of talked around it before. It's basically, some people think it's really media perception. So it's like this real American perspective has been exported, and where it's this idea of like independence equaling success. So being able to like be your own self-made person. And so like cutting yourself off from your parents, having independence, that kind of stuff has been like perpetuated through the media.
And the American dream.
Yeah. And like that kind of stuff has been exported globally. Mm. So even if it doesn't match with you culturally, you know, you then start seeing it. You're like, oh, well, this is normal. I see it on TV. Oh, this is normal. Mm. Now my TV, now the programming that I make here is now reflecting that. You know, even if it isn't true, it starts to become like there.
I find that really interesting because the two-thirds figure that like two-thirds of single people in Britain under 30 are living at home. I didn't expect that. Like you look around and you think it's much lower. Like I don't feel like that many people are living at home. And I think there is almost a media perception there or maybe even a London-centric perception there.
But isn't that driven from the fact that it's unaffordable to not?
Yeah, but what I mean is, you know, from the people I know, the people I talk to, the perception from media, news, general popular culture, you get the impression that most young people have moved out.
Right, right.
Do you see what I mean? Like, as in the reality doesn't actually match the perception.
Right.
Yeah, and like speaking of perception, like it's quite interesting because a lot of media actually gets it wrong and actually really simplifies it. This they conflate the idea of living with versus living off. So, you know, when people, like you were saying on, was it OK Cupid? They were saying about the idea of like, oh, if you live with your parents and stuff, like in some cases people assume, oh, you're living off your parents. Oh, especially with men living at home and stuff. You know, at least I found talking to people, it's like, you know, there's that sentiment that, oh, you haven't made it. At least with me, it's like, oh, you know, so when you get a real job, you'll be able to move out and stuff. So it's that idea that success, the fact that you're living, you know, with your parents means that you're you haven't got life in order. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's coming back to what I said before, isn't it? It's like you have your own plans and it's people second guessing you, being like, listen, man, you don't know what the fuck's going on in my life. You don't need to pry away. You're not needed. Oh, I appreciate your advice if you're saying, oh, maybe you should move out, etc. But at the end of the day, you know, to be where we're at now in this specific industry and to excel at it, you have to make sacrifices. And some of that is having a shitty place to live or maybe living with your parents as a compromise. So, you know, I think it's just being understanding of that. But at the end of the day, I think we should live in a society that we're living in is also largely to blame because there are problems with house prices, with getting access to affordable housing. You know, you've got companies lobbying councils to reduce the amount of affordable housing they're providing. So you need to say, all right, cool, that's an institutional problem. That's a problem with government and, you know, bureaucracy and stuff like that. So
just a few stats, like in the UK, the estimate is that a single person needs 18 grand to live on their own, like each year to live on their own in a rented flat, 27 grand in London, and that the average person saves 7 grand by living with their parents each year.
Yeah.
And I think...
And I feel like even those figures, they're just like average figures, aren't they? Because I just feel like realistically, even if you earn 27 grand in London, I don't think you can live by yourself.
Yeah, like the highest I ever rent in London was 24, and I was living I was living just outside of London. And once you added in commuting costs and stuff, that was it was tough.
Yeah, I just even those figures, like and those probably like quite average figures, aren't they?
So let's talk about what we really want to talk about.
So just quickly with the sort of living with versus living off. I think something that ignores as well, that almost like dichotomy there, is that parents can benefit by having an extra person contributing something towards rent, you know, chipping in with the cooking, looking after younger siblings. You know, I think there's sort of going beyond our own situations. There are all sorts of benefits that they can have by having a grown-up child in the house.
Mm. Or in my sister's case, free babysitting.
Yes.
Define grown-up.
There's this idea, I think they've looked at it from an American perspective, sociologically, taking like the 19th and 20th century sort of immigration into the US. Mm-hmm. So we've talked about, you know, from a cultural background, people living like community mm-hmm. living and stuff. So having your extended family around you, multi-generational living like in one household and stuff. And whereas they might come from cultures where they do that, when they come to the US, people actually start living as they do in the US. Sort of, you know, that independence and sort of splitting off and not living with the extended family stuff. And they think there's sort of two real reasons why, there are two models into how they might or might not achieve that. So they might live independently or might not. And the first is like something called linear assimilation. So basically what that does is it's saying, okay, once you get into the country, you know, you come from somewhere else, you once you come into the US, there's like this steady generational transition. So like within two or three generations, you start taking on like the cultural characteristics of the native. So you start like, you know, if not your children, then your grandchildren, your great grandchildren will start to be like that. And, you know, you can see that in some places, you know, you can start to see that, you know, now people who've come from like, you know, I know people who've come from like West Africa and stuff, you know, parents or grandparents and stuff, who are now very much like, you know, living that Black British narrative, which is, you know, potentially some people are starting to live, you know, live independently. But then there's also this idea of segmented assimilation. So that implies that if you are, if you've come from a place that, you know, potentially does have extended like family living together, you might not necessarily just go, oh yeah, come to this country, we're going to do what they do. It's the idea that you actually, different groups, different ethnic groups or different like sociological groups or like slot into different places in society. Yeah. And so it can find that like certain, cultural values of like certain groups can become like stubborn, or they can be stubborn about it. And so the idea that you know, you can see things like resistance strategies, so what they call like enclave living, which is like, you know, what you can see in what we've talked about, like, you know, certain groups, like I know for instance like Balham, Mitcham, you know, a lot of Norwood, like Thornton Heath, you know, a lot of these places, a lot of African, a lot of West African, like, you know, those areas are like, you know, that's enclave. When people come to a new country, they're going to live around people that, you know, they know and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know if, is it East London or is it West? Is it, is West London right for Asians, right?
It's everywhere.
But it's, there's pockets.
Yeah, like enclaves. Yeah.
So we like Ilford is a really good example of what has been an Asian enclave. And but you see that that's happened in phases. There's an Irish enclave before, and now it's becoming an Eastern European enclave as people from originally from Ilford move further out. And you look at places like Chigwell now, and that's an Asian enclave, but for very like wealthy Asians, for example. So it's little pockets all around London, I'd say, for Asian people specifically, but traditionally East London.
So there's some interesting sort of international differences in sort of percentage of young people living at home, and I sort of picked out a few interesting ones. So in Europe, there's been a drop since 2008 across sort of the whole continent. But Italy is the one exception where it's actually risen. So 18 to 34-year-olds, 65% are living at home, and three quarters of those living at home are men. And that really has been attributed to sort of a Mediterranean culture of family being very, very important. But there's still a stigma attached. So a lot of the men who are living at home are called sort of mama's boys in Italian, which I find it interesting that sort of, you know, clash between there still being a bit of stigma, but also this is culturally important to us. Egypt, there's still a lot of stigma against anyone sort of moving out before marriage. I found some interesting interviews with people whose, you know, they wanted to move out and their parents were actually quite sort of, you know, liberal and modern and were happy for them to, but they couldn't actually find accommodation or they had to sign clauses saying they wouldn't have anyone of the opposite sex over to visit as part of their tenancy.
Wow. Which is fine for me.
Yes. Yes, you'd be absolutely fine living in Egypt, Tom.
I feel as though I was, there are other situations. All right. It's not tenancy. All right.
Let me live.
I feel as though the Egyptian government might have a very different issue with you. Oh, he's not living with women. He's not living with women.
Oh my God.
China is an interesting one because it's now up to like 70% of Chinese millennials are homeowners compared to 31% in the USA. And this has been traced to the one child policy because it means that there are families where you have two sets of grandparents and a set of parents with a single heir. So those six people can pool their resources into making sure that their child slash grandchild is able to own a property.
Wow.
And this is sort of, this is another contribution to this is the fact that because of the one-child policy and boys being valued more than girls, there are now 30 million more single men than women on the Chinese dating market, and owning a property is seen as improving a man's prospects.
Man, I feel bad for those dudes. Paying for a world of problems.
Whereas this actually, like, it contrasts quite sort of nicely with, in Hong Kong, 76% of 18 to 35 year olds live at home, which is partly because it's one of the world's most expensive cities, which sort of circles back to what we were talking about at the beginning.
It's like London is ridiculously expensive.
So expensive,
like, you know, the stuff you see in certain properties, it's like, how am I paying money for this? You've got mold, you've got like damp,
and you want me to live in a cupboard under the stairs.
Alright, I'm not here for that Harry Potter bullshit. All right.
I think the problem is actually recently there has been a fall, and one hasn't been a fall, but the rate at which house prices are growing in London is starting to fall. But saying that, house price rises are still outpacing wage growth in many parts of the UK, not just London, and that is what is causing a lot of problems. So the rate at which house prices are increasing is more than the rate at which wages is increasing. So that's ultimately what it comes down to, is that, you know, there's a finite amount of houses and wages are shrinking, so it's harder to get.
But
a
is
nice
it finite
place.
Amount of houses? Or like, is finite amount of affordable houses?
Affordable
there's
houses.
There's a lot of houses in London. There's a lot of properties in London, which are empty.
Define affordable. That's a contentious point.
Because there are 200,000 empty homes in the UK.
That's insane.
But the thing is a lot of, and this is another story I've worked on for the news, but in London and Pacific, there's a problem with kleptocracy and people using money, houses as a store of value. And that is a big problem. It's like people invest money. The London becomes a lightning bolt for this very dubious money flowing into the UK. And it ends up in these houses where you don't know who owns it. It's done through offshore holding companies. If you look at the Panama Papers, a lot of that was around these very dubious companies buying up bit large properties in the UK. And they were often linked back to, you know, like oil barons or like ministers in oil-rich countries, for example. So it's very, what we're seeing and what we're experiencing in our daily lives is actually linked to larger institutional problems that we were kind of touched on before,
you know,
wasn't it?
If you've got ministers, if you've got, you know, oil barons, if you've got heads of state all around the world, even, you know, people in the UK who are buying these properties and using them sort of like short-term ISAs, because while property around the world, you know, it waxes and wanes, values go up and down, you know, in London they pretty much stay the same. There's very little, like,
it's change. Constantly increasing.
So investing in property here is actually a pretty good way of storing money,
and a secretive way, because until the Panama Papers you couldn't link a lot of this stuff because it was done through all these kind of shady companies. But that's part of the problem as well, and again it is also to do with government policy around this issue as well.
There are over 200,000 empty homes in the UK, and over 20,000 of those are in London.
Shit.
With a further 25,000 in the commuter belt around London.
Wow.
Either it's unaffordable or those houses are owned by people who are using them, you know, a few times a year rather than living in them continuously.
That's insane.
So the question I want to know is, what is affordable housing? What constitutes as affordable housing? Is it actually affordable?
I think something that's interesting is I know a lot of people who've come up against that thing of, you know, going through referencing checks and being told, oh, you can't afford to live in this like property. Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, what else am I spending my money on? I need to live in London to go to work. So is going to be, for example, more than half of my salary is going to go on my rent every month. And it's interesting that that's, you know, it's perceived as unaffordable, and rightly so. I don't think that, you know, that shouldn't be the case. But there's also the thing of, like, people will find a way to make it work if they really need to.
So I think quite interesting off the back of that. Have you heard of something called property guardians?
Yes, I have. One of my friends lived in a guardianship, actually.
No, I haven't. Tell me about this.
Okay, so property guardians are basically what you do is you live in, not abandoned, but like unused property. So like the idea of it, like the tagline of it is essentially it's like a win-win. So landowners, they can secure their buildings, right? So somewhere that isn't being used, you know, say an unused property, one of those unused properties, mm-hmm. In London or in the country, or you know, a factory or whatever.
Right.
It doesn't have to be homes; it can just be urban spaces, all of that. You know, landowners, they can secure those places, and then guardians, those are people, you know, they come in and they can benefit from cheaper living costs. So it can be, you know, £200-300 a month in somewhere like London, you know, and you get to live in somewhere like, you know, pretty decent, because these properties are going to be in like easy to access areas sometimes. And so, you know, these spaces are used, people have a place to live. But in exchange for that, what you have is, as a guardian, you have you have no comfort of like, and the security, you don't have the comfort and security of like a traditional tenancy agreement, because what you have is guardian licenses, and some of the like common license rules include no overnight visitors and no more than two friends on site at any time, and speaking to the media is prohibited.
And wait, so this is like a legal thing that people are doing? Wow.
So think about it. You're living in a place to secure the place. It's not like the landowners are paying you, the property owners are paying you. You're paying them for the ability to secure their place. You know, otherwise, they might have squatters or you know whatever. So guardians, they don't have the right to solely occupy any part of the building. So that means that, you know, they're always going to be with other people in there. Any part of the building, always going to be other people. And here's the most difficult bit. They have to be ready to leave the building at a short notice.
I know people who've been property guardians and they've had like a week's notice to vacate their homes.
Really?
Mm. Yeah, similar. Actually, very recently, a friend of mine, she posted a story saying, I've got to leave my place. And she had to like pack all her stuff in like just a few days and leave. And it's like, I'd been to her place before and I'd seen it's like an old office block that was kind of waiting for a new buyer. She'd been there comfortably for like nearly a year or something in the middle of Camden. And then suddenly you got to move. And it's like, yo, that's a difficult thing to do in London. It's like, just pick up and move. Luckily, she just got a new job. So she was pretty good in terms of money and stuff. But it's like, if she was kind of in between jobs, or you know, that she didn't have the money, or you know, and stuff like that, she didn't have the resource to help her, that could have been a very difficult situation to handle.
So talking about it, like, you know, you see these sorts of like situations and you're like, oh, you know, property guardians, they seem like, even on paper, you know, something would be quite good. And it was sort of in the past, but right now, you know, these companies that do property guardianship and sort of source people for it, they've essentially become new estate agents. So what they're trying to do is, instead of like one or two or three people to an area, they're putting in like 15 or 16. So essentially it's just becoming incredibly cramped living, as cramped, if not more cramped than, you know, other parts of London, you know, where you're paying 400, 500 for a box room. And to add to that, you don't have the same tenancy rights.
Yeah.
You know, you can be kicked out. In like, there have been some cases where you've had 48 hours. All right.
So what's the draw? Why would you?
Because it's cheaper.
It's cheaper. That's it.
Yeah.
And if you're coming from somewhere, say you're coming from Edinburgh, or you know, another country or whatever, you know, this is something that you've got to think about. And yeah, you have less rights, and it's just, yeah, it's fucked up.
And then I know it's like, part of those like rights and problems, people have had issues with sort of like utility supplies as well. So not necessarily having internet, or having to use like, you know, a 4G based system rather than sort of a plugged in Wi-Fi web. Or, you know, own, like having to have pay as you go electricity, which is more expensive. And so there's loads of layers to it.
Yeah.
And I think it's often like they really big up how much cheaper it is, but they don't talk about the fact that the property owner is massively benefiting. Like it, because I think it reduces some of the tax they pay. It, you know, massively reduces the chances that property is going to be damaged or, you know, vandalized in some way. So they are gaining by having people in their property.
So you're saying it should be equal, the benefit, cost benefit needs to be kind of spread out a bit more.
I think it just needs to be more transparent.
Yeah, that's fair.
Because like some things, like I guess if you look at it and you go, oh well, I can't have guests, and or like, you know, have a party or whatever. Mm. But you're still going to do it and no one's going to check. But it's the more serious stuff, like the utilities.
Yeah.
And the fact that you have to like vacate so quickly.
Mm. Yeah.
That you might not. Yeah. I don't know.
That might just give you a good excuse if you're antisocial. Listen, can't have people over.
Yeah. Can't have a sexy party tonight. It's against the rules. Against the rules.
So we've come to the end of today's episode. How is everyone feeling?
Pretty sad.
Pretty
good.
I thought you were just going to stop at pretty.
Yeah, he's just feeling pretty.
Yeah.
I'm feeling pretty sad. I mean, no, I just feel like I don't know when I will have my dream of having my own place in London. So maybe I should leave London.
Maybe we should all get a place and just
We should have like
we are
day.
Not getting
what
a place.
What if we find a studio and live in a studio? Oh my god, you guys, we've solved the problem.
Listen, people, we're going to start this Kickstarter campaign.
Wasn't it you who tweeted something about how starting a podcast is more commitment than getting married?
No, it was I retweeted someone's tweet, and apparently that's very true. I can't remember who tweeted that, but it's true.
Do you think that you're going to get on the property ladder, and if so, when?
Okay, can we circle back to the idea of all four of us living together? Because that is exactly, that's what the listeners want, okay? They want A1 quality content all the time,
we
right?
We should live stream the
exactly,
house,
like, 24/7. All this right. is, yeah, okay, we have what? Every 2 weeks we're coming out now? No. Every 6 hours.
Every day, tune in every, at live stream.
Yeah.
At Why Not Duck.
Right. It won't be science and tech anymore. It'll be some battle royale on an island. Yeah.
This is sounding like my worst nightmare.
It's just going to be me in a pair of shorts, eating some Jaffa cakes, Alex playing
a lone guitar that you've got left. All right. So Oz wondering how he got into this space.
Yeah. I mean, I would get Oz's cooking, which looks amazing.
Can you make peanut butter toast?
That's disgusting.
And would kill me.
I will make you way more nicer stuff.
Right. I think it's just scary even talking about how terrible things are currently, and how difficult it is as a young person to like get on the ladder and get better and sort of not start your life, but have the life that people sort of see you should have.
I think it does feel like we've barely scraped the surface here, because like you say that and I want to go, well, I'm not sure whether I want to be on the property ladder. Like, I think it takes freedom away from you.
I would like to go start a food cart in the Pacific Northwest.
Sahel.
I was with you until you said Pacific Northwest.
Sahel.
That's where I live.
I think I'm pretty easy going about this. I think luckily in my family we're a strong unit, and you know, if my two brothers have got properties, so I'm the next on the line. Basically, my competence means that people will help me do it. But I think, you know, I think I'm confident I will get on there, but I will need help, and I'm conscious that a lot of people don't have that help. They don't have that strong unit around them. And that those are the people that we've got to, you know, I'm impartial, but, you know, I think the policy needs to change to help people like that.
Honestly, for me, I'm not sure, but I'm going to take it one day at a time. And hopefully at some point in the future, house prices will drop massively and I can buy them and keep them a property.
I mean, there's a political event coming up that, you know, may crash. Property prices.
Well, we're not going to talk about that.
No, we're not. I've been Hannah, and I've been joined by Alex, Sahail, and Oz.
Bye.
Peace out. See ya.
This has been Why Aren't You a Doctor Yet? See you next episode. Bye.
Okay, one person is not people.
One person one time said, I'm like a fat James Franco. And it was equally the biggest insult and the greatest compliment I've ever received.
Let's break that down. Because first of all, one person is not people. They're one person. Second of all, I think that's a pretty good compliment. Why would you get insulted by that?
I was a little bit insulted, but then I was like, you know what? That's such a
pretty
sweet.
I guess the fat part was unnecessary. They could have just been like, you're an Asian James Franco.
I know, but it's true though, so. I can't deny reality.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.